Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace.
And this is Nick Dahl.
And this is another Comic Source Podcast episode for Tuesday. However, it is not a nine-panel grid episode. We are going to be doing the nine-panel grid episodes that I told you guys about a while back, focused on artists and their processes. But we decided that we wanted to do both audio and video so you could kind of see what they're talking about. You can only describe it, you know, in so much detail. As the saying goes, a picture is worth a thousand words. So we are going to delay the rollout of the nine-panel grid episodes focusing on art and artists' process and how they work and their workflow and all that kind of stuff. We're going to delay that till the start of June. But hopefully once June rolls out, we'll have a few recorded that will give us a cushion as we move forward. And so we didn't want to basically have some and then have weeks off. We want to be able to, once it starts, keep it going on a consistent basis. So we decided to delay the start of that. So apologies for that. In the meantime, I hope you all checked out our recent Giant Size 300th episode. We, Nick and Jay, and I talked about some of our favorite artists working in comics today. Well, some previous, like Dan DiCarlo, who's no longer with us, and Michael Turner, who's no longer with us. But for me, I focused on current artists. So we all had a little bit of a different take, but it was a really fun episode, some great discussion. So I hope you guys all had a chance to check that out. If you didn't, I encourage you to go and listen to it and let us know what you think about our picks. Let us know who we missed, who we left off, somebody we put on whose art you can't stand. Tell us why we're wrong. We love to hear feedback from all of you listeners. So I really encourage you to do that. So in the meantime, since we're not going to be doing the nine-panel grid on Tuesdays, Nick has decided that he is going whole hog, or perhaps I should say whole Wolverine, on the Hunt for Wolverine miniseries, buying the core series as well as every tie-in he possibly can imagine. I think there's like what, Mystery and Madripoor, and
yeah,
what else is there?
It's at least two other like four issue books.
Yeah,
but we're completely, I added them so long ago.
Completely unprepared. Let me do a quick search. But what we decided to do is basically read these books and then talk about them. So, you know, it's not going to be a thing where we get preview copies and we're talking about them before the books have been released, because we don't get preview copies from Marvel. So what we're going to do is we'll talk about them after they've already been out. We'll talk about them Tuesday, having come out the previous Wednesday. So you have almost a week to read the issues before they come out. So, yep, Hunt for Wolverine, which came out last Tuesday. We also have, let's see here, Weapon Lost. We have Adamantium Agenda, The Claws of a Killer, and the previously mentioned Mystery in Madripoor. So they're all by different creative teams, Mystery and Madripoor, and they're all four-issue series, I should say. So when you look at the Hunt for Wolverine event overall, you've got the four-issue Hunt for Wolverine and then the four issues of each of these. So it's 16 books total that you're looking at to read if you want the whole story. So as I said, Hunt for Wolverine, Mystery and Madripoor, written by Jim Zub, art by Chris Bacalo or Bacalo. I never know. That's one of those that I'm not even sure. I've heard it both ways. B-A-C-H-A-L-O. He's been around forever. You'd think I'd know how to pronounce it by now. The Claws of a Killer is written by Mariko Tamaki with art by Butch Geis. The Hunt for Wolverine Adamantium Agenda is written by Tom Taylor with art by R.B. Silva. The Hunt for Wolverine Weapon Lost is written by Charles Soule with art by Matteo Buffani, B-U-F-F-A-G-N-I. Not familiar with him either. And then, of course, we have the main series, Hunt for Wolverine, also written by Charles Soule, with art by Steve McNiven that we're going to be talking about in this episode. So we will be reading all these books and talking about them, as I said, on Tuesdays, the books having come out the previous Wednesday. So keep in mind, spoilers, spoilers, spoilers. So if you haven't read them, you may want to skip these episodes or get out to your comic shop, pick up the episode on the Wednesday they're released and make sure you have it read in time to tune in and hear our thoughts. And again, love to hear feedback if there's something we missed or something you think we got wrong, or just something you want to add to the commentary. You know, you'll have plenty of time to send in your thoughts and comments. You can email them, let us know on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all that kind of stuff. And then we'll mention your comment on the podcast. So let's give the creative team for the Hunt for Wolverine number one, and then we'll give our kind of initial thoughts. So Charles Soule, David Marquez, Rachel Rosenberg for Secrets and Lives, because there is I don't want to say it's like multiple stories, because it one seemed to flow into the other, but they're listed as multiple stories. So perhaps I should. So yeah, Secrets and Lives, Charles Soule, David Marquez, and Rachel Rosenberg. Hunter's Pride, Charles Soule, Paolo Sequeira, Walden Wong, and Ruth Redman. And there's covers by Steve McNiven, Jay Lysine, and Laura Martin. Variant covers by Marco Cecchetto, Elizabeth Tork, Nolan Woodward, Adam Kubert, and Dan Brown, Mike Diodato, and Maury Hollowell. So what were your overall impressions of the book, Nick?
I liked it quite a bit because I've been reading a lot of modern Marvel. So, like, I don't know. I'm still kind of getting used to the universe after Secret Empire and what Marvel's been trying to do with – I've been trying to figure out what Marvel's been trying to do with Legacy and whatever they called the new one. So all new, all different Marvel again or something.
Generations?
No, the one they're doing after Legacy that's about to hit.
Oh, A Fresh Start.
A Fresh Start. But I haven't read really a Wolverine comic before. I've been reading Old Man Logan ever since I found out it was actually set in modern times and not in the future. I'm kind of as my Wolverine fill-in since I started getting Marvel comics. So I'm kind of excited to have the character back. It's kind of weird that they're doing these after they did those. They had like post-credit sequences on a lot of books for a while. It was like, yeah. Where is Wolverine now?
We'll talk about that. We'll definitely talk about that. My initial impression, you know, it's Charles Soule, so I expected a good story, and that's exactly what I got. I read Death of Wolverine.
Oh, okay.
Not having kept up at all with any X-Men stuff for years. I mean, years, but it was Death of Wolverine, right? And it was Charles Soule, so I felt like, yeah, let me check this out. And I was kind of lost when I first started reading it, but you know, you catch on pretty quickly. That 4-issue series pretty much has everything you need to know right within the series itself. So for those that haven't read it, spoilers, I'm going to talk about it right now, basically give you the overall story extremely briefly. So Wolverine was battling something, some entity or hive species from the microverse, and they infected him. They were trying to find a way to basically like control his physical body. And his healing factor was eventually able to destroy that virus that was infecting him. But in doing so, it burned out his healing factor. So he no longer had his healing factor. And he went around to the brightest minds of the Marvel Universe trying to find a way to get his healing factor back. No, he went and saw Beast. I think he went and saw Tony Stark. He went and saw Mr. Fantastic. And they all told him the same thing. Yeah, sorry, buddy. Can't help you. Not sure what happened, but your healing factor is gone. And Mr. Fantastic told him, okay, you can't be Wolverine anymore because you're carrying around so much metal, so much adamantium on your skeleton that if it wasn't for the fact that you had super strength, you wouldn't even be able to walk right now. And you can't pop your claws anymore because having them go in and out of your skin without your healing factor, it's going to get infected. You know, it could be life-threatening. And so Wolverine kind of made peace with that. He's like, okay, fine. I can't be Wolverine anymore. I'm actually going to be able to have a normal life because I'm going to age. I'm going to grow old. And he seemed to kind of to make peace with that, as I said. But at the same time, some other people found out that he didn't have his healing factor anymore. So he had a bounty on his head. People were going after him. And he was kind of forced to fight, and there's a few times he got pretty jacked up, but he was able to use a regeneration serum that Beast had created for him, Hank McCoy. And it wasn't as powerful as his natural healing ability, but at least it, you know, helped him survive some of these fights and wounds and damage that he received. And in the meantime, you know, he's trying to find out who's put this hit out on him, despite other people like Kitty Pryde telling him, dude, you can't do this anymore. And he's like, I don't want to be doing this. I'm forced to do this by circumstances. I just want to live my life in peace. I can have a normal life now. I can grow old, but I can't do that. I've got to stop these people from coming after me first. So he eventually finds out through various machinations during the story that the guy that's behind it was the guy that was one of the chief scientists of the Weapon X project originally, and the one that actually grafted the adamantium onto Wolverine's skeleton. But he hasn't been able to duplicate the process. And the reason he hasn't been able to duplicate the process is because nobody he's tried it on has that mutant healing factor. That's basically the reason that Logan was able to survive the process, is because he had that healing factor. And so when Wolverine finally confronts him, he's kind of like, well, the joke's on you, buddy. I don't have that healing factor anymore. You know, I couldn't give it to you, give you the secret of it, or let you, you know, find a way to extract it from me, even if I wanted to, because it doesn't exist anymore. And the scientist, I think his name's Abraham. Don't actually remember. But he had three subjects there ready to go, and he basically flips a switch to have their bodies flooded with the adamantium. And Wolverine pops his claws and slices the pipes carrying the adamantium metal. Does not want them to die. He feels like they're innocents in it. And the molten adamantium flows over Wolverine's body, and he's just covered with the stuff. And he goes after Abraham as Abraham tries to escape, kills him, and stumbles out onto the roof of this facility and sees a sunrise. And he kneels down there and stops moving and allows the adamantium to harden. And that's it. That's the end of Wolverine. It wasn't exactly the death that I expected. I guess in a way he did go down in battle, but yeah, it was interesting. I think it was relatively well received. As far as the death of Wolverine and the impact, I mean, there were various follow-up miniseries that explored that. I didn't read any of those. And honestly, in recent years, you know, Marvel being Marvel, they can't leave well enough alone. Yeah, Wolverine hasn't been here, but Old Man Logan has, and X-23, who's Wolverine, has a daughter, and Wolverine's son from an alternate timeline, James Hudson, and there's one other. There's like four Wolverines like running around, and it's like, huh? We don't have the original, but we got four other ones to take his place. It's like, you don't even let people miss the character because you've got all these other, you know, Wolverines running around. So it's kind of annoying to me. But in the meantime, Marvel Legacy that we just mentioned on the, you know, one of the last scenes is Wolverine finding a soul gem, and somehow he's back, and we don't know how he's back or what's been going on. And then as Nick alluded to, he's been showing up in these kind of quote unquote post credit scenes in a lot of books recently where he's looking for different heroes. He's out there like looking for Spider-Man, looking for Daredevil, looking for just traveling around. And I haven't been reading any books that he's shown up in. I haven't been reading much Marvel at all these days, to be honest with you. So have you read any books where he's shown up in those post credit scenes, Nick?
Yeah, like two or three. It's.
Does he seem to have his memories, or is he not sure who he is? Or
he seems to always like, I seems to know what's going on. And he's like walking around with the rock in his hands half the time, like showing, I think, in all the post credit scenes. I think he has a space stone.
So I wonder why hasn't he gone to tell the X-Men that he's alive?
Oh, he's at least been in the same city as other comics have taken place.
Yeah.
I believe he referenced the events that took place there. Like, oh, Captain America was just here and I believe he's referenced something like that. Yeah. Where he's like looking for Captain.
And yeah, I just wonder how much of his memory he has. So anyway, in this book, right inside the front cover, we get very short, even a shorter synopsis than I just gave you. Wolverine died entombed in molten adamantium. The X-Men took his metal encased body and hid it away, keeping its location secret. But nothing stays buried. It was only a matter of time. And then we get Hunt for Wolverine. So, just to give a brief synopsis of this issue, 40 pages, by the way. So really a long story. There's several times I was like, oh, it's over. That's the last scene. And I turn the page. Oh, there's more. Great. I get to keep reading. So basically the Reavers have found out where Wolverine's body is and they want the adamantium. So they try to go and steal it, but the supposed tomb of Wolverine is not without safeguards. And so even though they don't realize it, the Reavers trip some silent alarms and the X-Men show up, including Storm, Nightcrawler, Colossus, Kitty Pryde, and Firestar. That's who. Firestar of all people. Not exactly the most well-known of the X-Men. But if you're of a certain age like me, you certainly remember her from Spider-Man and his amazing friends, that awesome Saturday morning cartoon. It's a pitched battle with the Reavers. The X-Men eventually win. And there are some flashbacks during the battle that show the X-Men putting Wolverine in the tomb and having some discussion on whether or not it's okay to just leave him there encased in the metal. And they're like, we're literally putting him on a pedestal, but what can we really do? They're just not sure. Meanwhile, the X-Men do defeat the Reavers, but not until after the Reavers discover that Wolverine's body is actually not there. It's no longer in the adamantium shell, if you will. So that's the secret that the X-Men were holding. And the Reavers are like, it's empty. They played us. So we learn that Colossus had the idea for Kitty Pryde to use her phasing powers to reach inside the statue and or the molten casing that Wolverine was encased in and pull him out. And she actually says it's the hardest phasing she's ever had to do because she's got to phase through the adamantium and phase Wolverine's body and the adamantium within his body, but she can't, she's got to differentiate the metal that's around him versus the metal that's inside him. So she eventually is able to extract his body and they bury him in a secret place where supposedly nobody knows where he is. And they leave the other statue, the other encasement that he was in as a memorial for others to go and pay their respects. And supposedly they don't tell anybody where his actual body is. So meanwhile, back in the present, Alpha Flight is called in. They take the Reavers away. And Colossus and Kitty are like, so it's still a memorial to Wolverine, even though it's kind of busted in half. It has evolved. And Kitty Pryde says, let's get out of here. I can't wait to tell Logan about this. And you almost think, wait, does she know that he's alive? And you flip to the next page and she's at his grave. The place where they buried him. It looks like some kind of a grassy valley with trees and, you know, surrounded by mountains. And she tells the story and pours out some Canadian beer over the tomb. And then as she glances, she sees what looks like some fabric that was maybe the shroud that he was wrapped in when he was buried, kind of off in the distance, tangled up in some bushes. And she's like, huh? And sure enough, she phases into the ground and reaches into his tomb, and Wolverine is not there. And then on the next page, we see Wolverine says, right now, and he's popping his claws into somebody and killing him. So it looks like maybe he's got his healing factor back, and he certainly is alive. And we find out that the X-Men dig up where his body was, and yeah, sure enough, he's not there. So The question is how and why, right? Because the X-Men don't know that he's alive. You know, Hank McCoy, Beast himself, is like, I ran every test in the book, man. This guy was dead. He was dead by every measure of the term. But just because his body's gone, again, they don't know that he's alive. It could have been stolen. It's very valuable. People could make clones. People could try to find a way to jumpstart the healing factor again and give it to themselves. Maybe they just want to harvest the adamantium. And there's all kinds of – maybe they just want revenge on the body because Wolverine hurt them in some way. So the question is, where is Wolverine? So Kitty Pryde goes and enlists the aid of Iron Man as well as Daredevil. She basically tells them the whole story. And she's like, hey, we need help to find out where he's at. And they divide into four teams to try to go find out where Wolverine is. So those are probably the four teams we're going to see in the four different miniseries. So again, it was a really good issue. There were several times where I thought it's going to be over, and then it kept going. So yeah, I was really blown away. I especially like the art in the second half of the issue, which I think that's the art that's by Paolo Sciura, who I'm not familiar with, but I thought it was really good. I mean, the art in the first part by Steve McNiven is great too. His style isn't quite as clean as the art in the second part of the book, but he handles action scenes very well, and his art is very detailed as well. So the art styles are really similar. It's just I think that Paolo's art is a little cleaner, but I really enjoyed the story. I think, as I said, you don't need to be completely caught up on everything that's going on with X-Men and the Marvel Universe to enjoy this, because I'm certainly not caught up. I'm years and years behind, and I got a lot of enjoyment out of this. I think that's one of the things that Charles Soule does really, really well. That being said, I don't think it's a bad idea to learn a little bit about the death of Wolverine. I think for Nick, what I suggested was I sent him a link to a YouTube video, and there's several out there that you just Google death of Wolverine and you'll get some videos that pop up on your Google search, and you just pick one and it gives a rundown in a little more detail than I did of what happened in the series. But again, I don't even think you necessarily need to do that. You can just pick this up with issue one, read it, and you're going to get everything you need to know. What we don't know yet is how much you're going to need to read the other series to understand what's going on in the core series. If I had to guess, I'd say you'll probably be able to read the core series on its own, because again, Charles Soule's a good writer, and I think he's aware of the fact that not everybody's going to pick up all the tie-ins. That being said, if you do pick up some of the tie-ins, you're probably going to have a richer experience, but I'm sure that there'll be some references to what's going on in the other books in the main book, but I think the main book will be able to stand on its own. So yeah, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was great. I have absolutely no problem with the pacing or the dialogue or anything, but again, Charles Soule is a really, really talented writer. So if anything, what I was worried about not liking it would have been just how convoluted Marvel's stories are these days and how much of a barrier to entry it is, and especially being the X-Men corner of the universe that I really haven't read any of in a long time. So those are some of my concerns, but I needn't have worried. I think Soule does a great job of giving us what we need to know. And again, I think you can pick it up and read it, no problem. What else do you have to add, Nick?
Actually, I had a question for you. As far as killing off characters and bringing them back, do you think it's been long enough for Wolverine? Like, what's the average death of a character these days? Because, I mean, they all come back, as we've said before, except for Uncle Ben and the Waynes. But
yeah, it's kind of interesting to talk about that.
I mean, cause like we've said, they've had a fill-in, an old man Logan.
Yeah.
It's not like Wolverine's been gone, but
I feel like it hasn't been long enough. I feel like we haven't had a non-Wolverine Marvel universe. because of all these other Wolverine versions of him that have been running around. So that being said, there's kind of no substitute for the original. So in that way, I think it's been long enough. But again, I just feel like because they've had these other ones running around that we haven't had a break from Wolverine. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? So I guess yes and no. I mean, it's fine to bring him back because it's like he hasn't really been gone. So, but if you want, like, if you really want, you want to say, okay, part of the reason we're going to take Wolverine off the game board, so to speak, is because we feel like we've overused him and we want to be able to tell new Wolverine stories and we need kind of a reset, right? Then you've got to take him off the board and leave him off the board, I'd say, for at least 18 months is my feeling, at least, before you can think about starting to tell the story of how he comes back. In my mind, Marvel hasn't done that because they have had these other versions of Wolverine running around. That being said, it's been about 2.5 years since the original Wolverine has been, quote unquote, alive in the Marvel universe. So I don't know. It's tough to say. Nowadays, there's so many different titles and different versions and different media. You know, there's cartoons and video games and movies and everything. And, you know, everybody knows now that one of these big companies is never going to kill off one of their characters permanently. Not somebody like Superman or a Batman or a Wolverine or a Spider-Man. It's just not going to happen, you know. Like all the people that freaked out when Dan Slott supposedly killed off Peter Parker, and Peter Parker had the consciousness and personality of Dr. Octopus.
Oh, yeah. Superior Spider-Man.
Yeah, Superior Spider-Man, right? And supposedly the original Peter Parker was dead forever.
Yeah.
Freaking out. And I'm like, what? They are never going to permanently get rid of Peter Parker. What are you freaking out about? He will be back. There is no way. These properties are worth billions of dollars. Billions of dollars with a B. There's no way a company like Warner Brothers or Disney is going to kill them off. So just calm down. Comic book deaths don't mean anything, unfortunately. You know, they, in a way, they lose a little bit of their impact because of that.
I think one of the most interesting panels is once we know the Wolverine's back up, kind of trying to understand what situation he's currently in, because they do cut to him at the end of the first story. We see him like in a weird, very Bryan Singer-y outfit, the old leather stuff, and someone's telling him he's done enough. So it seems like he might be under someone's control, which is...
Yeah, and that's what I was asking about, if when he showed up in those like post credit scenes, supposedly, you know, those cameos in those mm-hmm. books, if he seemed to know like who he was, because in here it looks like, yeah, he's kind of robotic and he doesn't seem to quite have all his senses. I mean, he's sitting there looking down at his hands and he pops the claws out. And he just kind of sits there, looks at him, and then, you know, retracts them. And it's like, what does this guy know? What is he doing? He's just sitting there, leaning against the wall, popping his claws in and out.
Like that's yeah.
Like a normal.
Because that's the biggest difference, I would say. Like, not remembering fully if he's has his full memories in the post-credit scenes, as we've been saying. He's always like dressed normally. Like he's never looked like this, at least. He's always like been walking around in like the blue jeans and like cowboy hat and stuff wherever he's been at. So this is kind of a different, this almost, well, one of the main reasons the Reavers say they're attacking at one point is they say his DNA and that kind of stuff's even worth more than the adamantium. So I'm almost wondering if at the end, or maybe even possibly seeing a Wolverine clone, because it actually, it reminds me of Logan, the movie Logan. So,
yeah, I mean, who knows? Because the other thing we don't know the timeline, right? We don't know,
yeah,
like where does this fit in versus because that's the thing. Like, they've brought him back already. I mean, we don't know the details, but clearly he's back. He showed up in Legacy, and they've been gradually parsing him out. And he has one of the stones, so clearly he's going to be part of the – I'm sorry, what's the latest Infinity event called?
Infinity Countdown, which I assume is leading into a different Infinity event.
Right. You know, we have Avengers Infinity that just came out, right? So is Infinity Countdown the one that's coming out right now?
Yeah, it started like a month ago or something.
Okay. So, yeah, it's leading up to another Infinity event. And then Wolverine's clearly going to be a part of it, which, when you think about it, doesn't really make a whole heck of a lot of sense, because previously the Infinity events were big players in those events are the cosmic characters in the Marvel Universe. Like, Wolverine has no ability to travel through space. He doesn't have a galactic surfboard or the ability to fly and propel himself, you know, through space or teleport or any of that kind of stuff. So the fact that they have him as the central character in an Infinity story seems very incongruous to me, but, you know, I'm not reading it. I don't know. Maybe it really works. Maybe they have a reason why he found the Infinity Stone, right? That's what they're called now.
Yeah. Well, they might still be calling them gems in the books. I don't remember. I think they jump back and forth. But I'm trying to remember what his role was in that, if he was in that much, because I did read Infinity Countdown Prime.
No, he was in it, right?
He had to, because he was even at the end of Legacy. We see him walking around in the normal, like, T-shirt and jeans. The same way you see him in the post-credit sequences holding the stone.
I thought you were going to be all in on the Infinity stuff.
I am. I haven't gotten all the issues yet. Since I got late from my friend. You know, so I read everything I've gotten, which I think is just Infinity War Countdown Prime, which is like, not like, I guess the issue zero. They always do like Prime and Alpha and that kind of stuff these days.
Yeah. Which, yeah. Okay. Maybe you listeners can educate us. Or, you know, I'm pretty sure I got them digitally. I just haven't, you know, like many of the previous 4 or 5 years worth of digital comics that I've, Marvel digital comics that I've gotten, I haven't read them.
I do know the stones work differently, and I believe almost all the people given them were terrestrial. I think only Captain Marvel is the only one who's like cosmic who has a stone. So they were like redistributed or reborn or something after whatever the last event was.
Yeah.
So, like, and now they work. The opening page shows how it works. It's like each one feeds off the last one like a circuit. This isn't even something you're doing in the movies even. This is just something they decided to do with the new relaunch of the Infinity Stones or Gems. So, like, in order to master space, you have to have a good soul. So you have to have the Soul Stone to master the Space Stone. But I think it takes two to get it to work. But if you have the whole circuit, it's the only way the gauntlet works now or something.
That's confusing. Yeah. This is the problem with the movies informing the comics.
Well, this is not the movies. I mean, they've changed names and colors because of the movies.
Right.
The movie doesn't have it working like a circuit. The movie doesn't have any of that stuff.
But if it wasn't for the movies, they wouldn't have changed the name. They wouldn't have changed what stone is what, whatever. And they wouldn't even be telling the story that they're telling.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, they wouldn't have brought back Infinity.
I'm not stone, saying.
Marvel's bringing back Infinity War.
I'm not saying that they're making the comics mimic the movies exactly. But I'm saying they still... still informs that it still makes they're still basing it. Anyway, let's get back to Hunt for Wolverine. What did you think of the art? Do you have a preference, McNiven versus Paolo Sequeira?
I like the second book better, which was
Paolo Sequeira.
Okay. Excuse me.
Yeah,
I mean, there is a lot less action in his book, but yeah. I really like the contrast between Tony Stark's lab versus like Daredevil Pitch Black. And you're not going to like why I like this other part, but he really, there's one or two panels where it really seems like he's drawing Tony Stark even closer to Robert Downey Jr. than I've ever seen him been drawn. Like, whatever page, there's like one where it's like he's working in a lab and it looks like uncanny, whereas normally they just kind of keep them looking close because all he needs is the facial hair.
Yeah.
But it looks like it's, did you think it looks like it's a little bit more modeled off of?
Yeah, I can see that, yeah. But I really like the way he makes Kitty. I really like the way he draws Kitty.
Yeah.
He looks great. So, I mean, I don't necessarily have a problem with it at this point, you know. They've made so many changes. based on movies, it's like, whatever. Just want to read a good story. So, and I feel like this, you know, this is a good story. Another big contrast, probably the biggest difference, because again, the art styles are relatively similar. Mm-hmm. There's a big difference in color palette. The second half of the book is a lot brighter in color than the first half.
Is that why, is that why they had them as different stories in the front, mostly for the crediting of it? Because they, like we said earlier, they're not really that different. One does feed right into the other. They don't feel like separate stories.
Yeah, you do get at the bottom of that page where Wolverine's been popping his claws in and out, you do get the little word in the end that says, in the corner that says end. You're like, oh, it's over. And that's why I was like, oh, wait, it's over. And then I turned the page and I was like, oh it's not over. There's more.
Because even picking up with Pride again, her perspective. So it's interesting.
Yeah, exactly. But she narrated the first story. Mm-hmm. So again, it was just like, and they're both told by Charles Soule. So yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure why they didn't just have McNiven do the whole thing. You know, I mean, they knew this was coming out for a long time. They had as much lead up time as they wanted. But maybe once they decided that, okay, we got the story that we want to tell, everything's been approved by everybody, needs to be approved. We want to get it out as soon as possible. So let's divide up the 40 pages into two stories. That way we can do two different artists. So yeah, I mean, I'm not really sure. I mean, there's plenty of times where they won't divide it up on a big story and they'll just have two different artists work on it. Sometimes I have three different artists work on it and it's not even like first, third, second, third, third, third. It'll just be like alternate pages. I mean, look at Immortal Men from DC recently, Jim Lee and Ryan Benjamin. And you've got to really know their art and go page by page and say, okay, yeah, this is Jim Lee. And the next page, Jim Lee, next page, I think this is also, no, Jim, no, this is Ryan Benjamin. Next page, Jim Lee, Ryan Benjamin. I mean, they don't differentiate at all. Sometimes what they'll do, I've seen them do, is in the credits, they'll say, you know, like Steve McNiven, pages 1, 2, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 through 12, right? And then the other pages, they'll list the artists that do that, those particular pages. But sometimes they'll just list them all as pencilers. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, there's different ways. Because sometimes maybe somebody worked on part of a page, did some of the pencils, and then handed it off to somebody else. I mean, who knows? So I don't know the reasoning for splitting it up like this. Maybe it was just to differentiate the creative teams. Maybe they knew, okay, we're going to split this first book into two stories, 20 pages. This creative team handles this one. This creative team handles this one. I mean, I don't know.
Interesting. And then do you know when Stark chose the team he's putting together? Is that a certain team from any point in comics that you already know? Or is it like Luke Cage, Spider-Man, Wolverine?
So I want to say that's the Secret Avengers team. But I'm not 100% on that because, again, I haven't read Marvel on a regular basis in a long time. But I know there was an Avengers team that had Spider-Man and Wolverine on it. So that is my guess. You could do probably a quick Google search on Secret Avengers and Secret Avengers roster.
Yeah, because I was trying to figure out who the other person was.
Jessica Jones, maybe?
That's what I was guessing, but...
Because, you know, Luke Cage is on that team, too?
Yeah.
I was trying to type Secret Avengers roster, and I started typing Secret Jones roster. Because I was talking about Jessica Jones.
Yeah. And also, because I remember Bendis's Avengers, which was right before I got into comics, so right before New 52 on DC, one of the covers I have to one of the volumes included Luke Cage, Spider-Man, and Wolverine. So that would have been late 2000s, early 2000s Avengers?
Yeah, maybe not. Yeah, it must not have been Secret Avengers because that the original one was Captain America, Black Widow, Beast, Valkyrie, Moon Knight, Agent 13, War Machine, Ant-Man, Nova, and then Hawkman, Captain Britain, Human Torch, Giant Man, Agent Venom. Yeah, I don't see any. But I know there was a... I know there was a team of Avengers that Wolverine was on, but I guess it wasn't Secret Avengers.
Oh, here's one that's really close. The New Avengers by Bendis. I can't find a year. The cover is The Thing, Luke Cage, Wolverine, Spider-Man, and I can't tell who the woman is. She's wearing a mask and yellow and black. I can't tell who she is, actually. I wonder if
what,
I can.
What were they? What kind of Avengers were they?
It's called The New Avengers, and it's by Bendis and Immonen from, let's see, it's on, I guess it's linked to the Amazon page, so I can see it there.
Oh, that's got to be it.
Yeah.
That's
from July 27, 2001, so when I was reading comics, I guess. It's Miss Marvel? Is that?
It's Carol Danvers.
Oh, that's Carol Danvers before she was Captain?
Yeah.
Or the current costume, at least.
I mean, I'm just going based on what the promotional art for the New Avengers Volume 2, Number 1 by Stuart Immonen.
Yeah, that's the one I was looking at.
Yeah, but yeah, you're right. Thing is on there, and he's not the picture. And that, and the other thing is, so there's no Iron Man either, right?
No, so maybe Iron Man's replacing the Thing? I don't know. Iron Man, this is the first time I've seen Tony Stark.
Back.
Because Tony Stark's been just a hologram for like the last 2 years or so.
Yeah, it says New Avengers 2005 to 2012, founders Iron Man, Captain America, Luke Cage, Spider-Man, Wolverine, Sentry, Echo, post-Secret Invasion as Captain America, Spider-Woman, Thing. Yeah, so. Yeah, I guess it's just another version of the New Avengers.
That's like a fun team to read about.
But that doesn't really look like the picture that's in the comic when Stark has everybody up on his screen. Clearly Luke Cage, clearly Wolverine, clearly Spider-Man. That is not a Carol Danvers I've ever seen.
No. That's why I'm saying, like, maybe they did Jessica Jones it out to be more New York heroes or something.
Yeah, that would be my guess. So, yeah, maybe one of the listeners can let us know. Let me ask you this. So, what do you think – so how do you think Wolverine came back to life?
Somebody
dug him up and jump-started him, hook him up to a car battery.
The fact that they're doing two different – it feels like it's a different event than Avengers Countdown Infinity Countdown. I feel like the Space Stone was related to him coming back. Like
Space Stone's – you think it's going to tie in? So clearly this
– maybe. I want to say that
– clearly this whole – the whole entire hunt for Wolverine title and the four – the three other series that tie into them, clearly it all takes place before his appearance in Marvel Legacy, right?
That's what it seems like so far. Since we've seen him in the backs, and we've seen him in, I believe we saw him in Infinity War, Infinity Countdown, Prime, blah blah, all the titles.
So you think cosmic? You think it's cosmic in nature?
Maybe, because like that book just made it sound like the stone just appeared in certain people's hands. So like, if a stone just appeared in his grave with him, that could be in like.
I thought at the end of Legacy, like there was. There was some kind of alien, right, that he fights, kills the alien, and the alien had a box, and he opens the box and finds the gem.
I guess all I remember is, like, the last panel of the Legacy where he's actually, like, looking at the stone. I remember that, but I don't remember how he got it.
Yeah, and there was another, some kind of a courier. Can't remember which alien race it was. But, yeah, he had it, and Wolverine killed him and opened it, and then he had the stone, so... I don't know that the stone like appeared. I don't know. It could be that somebody dug him up.
Mm-hmm.
Cause here's what's interesting, right? It's not like the grave looked disturbed, you know,
it's grassy and green.
Yeah. And if he would have climbed up out of it, he would have taken the time to put the dirt back in and cover the mound. And you know what I'm saying? That doesn't make sense either. But then if he got teleported out of the coffin or wherever he was buried in, we know he's buried in the shroud. So if he got like teleported out of that, then why was the shroud still there? That does make it seem like he, you know, came out right there in his location and wasn't just like magically teleported by the soul gem or the life gem or the or Stone or whatever, mm-hmm. whatever you call him, you know?
And we have no idea when he came out, like kind of like you said earlier. Like, could have been right after they buried him. It could have been, they just realized it this late after the attack on his grave. But like.
And, but maybe all this is happening. So maybe, you know, somebody came and they took him and they didn't want to, they didn't want anyone to know. So they tried to make, they tried to leave the place as similar as they could to how they found it.
Or like if it's been like 3 years, if someone took him immediately or he crawled out immediately when there was still dirt all over the place, it would still look grown over 3 years later. Like I'm saying, well, if he was only in there for like...
How many times do you think Kitty's gone to the gravesite to talk to him and she just so happens to notice the shroud this one time?
That's true. The shroud's recently there.
Yeah, right?
But the shroud's all... I don't know. The shroud's weird.
And it... And if somebody did come and take him and tried to leave it exactly as they found it, then why would they if they would notice that the shroud was missing and they would make sure to not leave that evidence behind for someone to find. So then that again makes me go back to thinking, yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe it does have something because I originally didn't think it had anything to do with the Infinity Stones. I think, okay, so he's resurrected however it happens. I almost feel like maybe his healing factor wasn't really burnt out the way they thought it was.
That's my guess.
He just needed to like kind of lay in this death-like state for so long that eventually his healing factor was able to kick in after a certain amount of time. And, you know, he was able to heal himself. But maybe not ever, like maybe the last thing to be healed is his brain, you know, his mind and his memories. And so he's out there wandering around, not exactly knowing for sure what time it is and having all his memories like he previously did. And then he finds the Infinity Stone, gets mixed up in that. And then by the time this series is over, the Hunt for Wolverine 16 issues with all the tie-in miniseries and everything, that by the time we're done with this, we'll know what happened. We'll have met back up with Wolverine. He'll have his memories restored. And at that same time will be when the Infinity Countdown event is over and it leads into whatever other Infinity thing happens. And then maybe he's going to be a part of that and maybe not. But if he does decide he's going to be a part of that, he'll at least he'll be like at full strength and he'll know and everybody will know he's back and he'll have all his memories. So the timing could work out like that. I could see them doing that for sure. But right now the big mystery is – for us as readers is what happened. The mystery for the characters in the book, the X-Men and Iron Man and whoever else Iron Man recruits and Daredevil, the mystery for them is finding Wolverine, right? Where is he? Because we also saw, we didn't mention this. We also saw in the issue that Lady Deathstrike,
mm-hmm.
the Reavers, one of the Reavers escaped and they informed Lady Deathstrike, hey, we were at Wolverine's tomb. We saw the adamantium shell cut open. He's not there. And Lady Deathstrike's like, I'm going to go find him. You know, she wants to know just as much as everybody else where he's at. So if Lady Deathstrike knows and starts asking questions, it's only going to be a matter of time before the larger Marvel universe is also aware that he's back. And he's going to have a lot of people looking for him. So thus the title, The Hunt for Wolverine. So anything else you want to add?
No, I mean, I'm excited that's kind of starting up. Like I always get skeptical of events, especially from Marvel when they start. Because I never know which direction they're going to go. I guess I won't know for sure for a few more weeks, but. Seems like another strong one after I really liked Secret Empire. So I'm excited for more, hopefully, good Marvel storylines. We'll see how Infinity Countdown goes alongside this so I don't get too confused. But, yeah, I'm excited to read more, find out what happened to him.
Yeah, and
see him back.
I think that, you know, we'll have a lot more to talk about on next Tuesday's Hunt for Wolverine spot because there'll be a lot more books out by then. I mean, we only had – like this one title, whereas next week we get Well, actually, no. I guess Hunt for Wolverine Weapon Lost comes out next week. So I guess we're just getting one a week. I thought we were getting multiples. But it looks like we're going to get one book a week. Let me double check that. So Hunt for Wolverine Lost, number one, comes out this week. And then if I look on May 9th, it looks like the Adamantium Agenda. So, yeah, it looks like so 16 parts, and we're going to get one week at a time. So we'll definitely be able to have plenty of time to break it down.
Yeah.
Break it down for you. And looking at the cover of Adamantium Agenda, that looks like that's going to be the Iron Man team book. And it does look like Spider-Man and Luke Cage and a girl in regular street clothes. So, yeah, I'm going to guess that that's
It has to be Jessica Jones then.
Yeah, it has to be Jessica Jones.
Especially if she got on blue jeans.
Yeah, it looks like blue jeans and a denim jacket and a purple-looking shirt.
So. All she wears these days.
I would think that she'd hate the color purple.
No, they've kind of made it her motif in the TV show, and that's kind of came back on to the...
The wear purple.
Yeah.
Subconsciously...
Well, they work a lot of it into the show in general places, but like, yeah, it's kind of found its way back into Bendis's book when they brought back Jessica Jones after season one of the show, where they work more purple into it.
So you think that Jessica Jones, like, subconsciously because of what happened?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of that because there's a little bit of a...
Or you know, she's like, no, I'm going to wear purple because even though you had me in every way possible and completely controlled... I'll show you by wearing purple and F you and throw it in your face.
She might be doing that now after the last storyline where she just dealt with the purple man again and at the end of Bendis's run. But before, I think it may have been because of the trauma without her realizing it because she was still traumatized.
I really feel like the purple man's an underused character. Like he should be like one of the most powerful people in all the Marvel universe. They barely used him. Usually he was a daredevil character. And then Bendis finally like uses him, but he turns him into a complete like psycho kind of guy where he never really had that before. He was more of a mustache twirling. Mm-hmm. I just want money and to do whatever I want kind of thing. And then he really flipped a switch on him. And now I feel like he's tainted goods. He's always going to have this whole sexual connotation to him. And so, I mean, I guess he's a good villain, but it's weird, kind of the history of the Purple Man in Marvel is interesting. Be an interesting conversation to have with Bendis on his thoughts on why he took him that direction. So, anyway, I guess that's going to wrap it up for this first episode of the Hunt for Wolverine Spotlight. Again, we'll be doing them every week on Tuesdays, talking about the previous book, previous part of the story that came out the previous Wednesday. And I guess it's going to take us 16 weeks to get through everything. So we're in it for the long haul. But don't worry, even when we start doing the 9-panel grid episodes, we'll still keep doing these episodes as well. We'll just have to release 2 episodes on Tuesdays. So anything else you want to add, Nick?
No, I'm excited for the next part.
All right. Well, Nick and I once again want to thank you all for listening. Don't forget to go to lrmonline.com for all past episodes of the podcast. Twitter.com/TheComicSource is where we can be found on Twitter. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social media platforms. All 3 places are great spots to find out when we release new episodes and follow along with all our convention coverage. I have a press pass to go to Comic-Con Resolution in Ontario, California on Saturday, May 19th. Actually, I have it for, all days. I think it's just a 2-day show, the 19th and 20th of May. I have not yet decided if I'm going to go, only because Free Comic Book Day is coming up this weekend, this Saturday, May 5th. And then I've got the Phoenix Comic-Con in my hometown here the following weekend of the 24th or 25th or 26th. Actually, I'm not not exactly sure. I think it starts on the 24th, which is Thursday, and goes through Sunday the 27th. So not sure if I'm going to make it to Comic-Con Revolution or not. I do want to go. I've heard it's a really good show. What's interesting about it is it was started by a couple of the guys that used to be heavily involved in Long Beach Comic-Con. And when Long Beach used to be all about the artists and Artist Alley, it's kind of gotten away from that now. But what's funny is a lot of the artists I used to see at Long Beach every year are now at the Comic-Con Revolution show. So I'm going to try to make it at least for a day. If I do, and you're going to be there, let me know. I have that cool giveaway in my possession. So meet up and I can hook you up with that, as well as give you details on how to enter our big contest that's coming up in June for an even bigger prize. So once again, thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time.